WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Welcome to WrestleSpective Radio at FairToFlare.com. I'm Jason Mann, and with me today is Kay Sawyer Paul, also at FairToFlare.com. How are you doing today?
Awesome.
Good to hear. And today we are talking about the main event of WrestleMania 9 between Bret the Hitman Hart and Yokozuna. And
better known for me as the event that broke my heart as a wrestling fan.
Well, that's the somber note to begin this podcast on, but yes, it was certainly tragedy is way too strong of a word to describe in wrestling, but it was certainly I guess you call it an injustice, you know, a very much a wrestling injustice.
Mm-hmm.
And so very interesting how it played out. I guess how did the Bret Hart and Yokozuna situation come about?
Well, Jason, like all terrible wrestling pay-per-views, and there are many on that list, and to many, WrestleMania 9 is the top on that list to a lot of people, the build-up was actually not bad and somewhat promising. This was the first WrestleMania not to feature Hulk Hogan in the main event, which is just, you know, to a lot of people, very refreshing. And yet, at the same time, they feature a very old-school story, this sort of hometown hero meets the foreign evil. It's something that Hogan certainly did. It's something his predecessors certainly did all the time. That kind of story goes back to the 40s and 50s, the beginning of wrestling on television, right? This is certainly nothing new. They executed it pretty well, though. It was a good little 2 to 3 month build where Yokozuna is introduced to the company through just like dominating wins over the undercard of WWE, over lots and lots of guys. And then the 1993 Royal Rumble, where he just like doesn't even break a sweat winning that show. And then again, he has this sort of little mini feud with Hacksaw Jim Duggan leading up to this, which Duggan has just destroyed. And then they do this contract signing between Bret and Yoko just kind of bowls over him. There's this fun little bit of commentary with Heenan. And while Heenan's usually the bad guy announcer, and he's not like not cheering for Yoko, but he seems concerned that Yoko's hurting Bret too much and that there might not be a match at WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. Which I found interesting. So like it's not a terribly complicated story. Like characters sort of tell it by just announcing the two against each other. Yokozuna, until much later in his WWE career, spoke no English and barely any Japanese. I don't think he'd opened his mouth at this point. It was all Mr. Fuji talking for him.
Yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah, but yeah, just a very sort of stoic, serious character against another pretty stoic, serious character. Bret Hart was never really one to talk too much either. You know, this is certainly not Hogan versus Savage that you can build up with 6 months worth of interviews. It's just two guys who feel like they're at the top of their class who have gone on continuous winning streaks, right? I don't think Bret Hart had lost a match since October of the previous year, and Yokozuna came in a little bit later than that and hadn't been beaten yet either. So really, that's the story.
Yeah. Both these characters feel like very much like early to mid-80s WWE, as far as like I think Brett is kind of like the throwback to like the kind of like the Backlund style wrestling champion, mm-hmm. kind of like the, you know, the stoic, serious, you know, kind of humble guy, you know.
Yeah. And I certainly used to agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. And Yokozuna, you know, is very much the traditional, you know, Japanese foreign heel, you know, even though he wasn't really actually Japanese. And I don't think they said he was actually Japanese. They kind of squeezed around that so that they kind of made you think he was Japanese, but they actually like legitimately recognized, you know, I think he was Samoan, but, anyway, the point being is that, you know, but he's still playing that role very much. And, you mm-hmm. know, and obviously Mr. Fuji is carrying the Japanese flag and all that. So the match itself kind of feels like a mid-80s like WWE style match. Like it felt like, even though like WWE was starting to evolve with Brett being like a major factor in, you know, the evolution of, you know, kind of how the main events were worked and, you know, incorporating mm-hmm. more and more sophisticated wrestling than kind of had been there in the Hogan days. But this feels like a throwback in many ways. I don't know if that was intentional or that just kind of the way that it sort of ended up.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot weird about this show in general. And we don't have to go into the whole WrestleMania 9 thing being just an odd show. But yeah, so something very old school feeling about this story and these two characters. It's funny, like you're right, he's not from Japan, although I think they say he hails from Japan. It's still in that period a little bit in WWE where they just kind of made stuff up. Like, I don't think you can get away with these days saying that a guy's from somewhere that he isn't, right? But they used to do that all the time in the 80s.
Oh, right? Yeah.
You know, like just for point of character, they would say you're from a certain place just so you would get heat or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think, they were still doing that to a small extent here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I don't think they definitely couldn't. You know, you could get away with, you know, calling from like the wrong town or whatever, but actually from like the wrong, you know, from the wrong country, especially if you're talking about, you know, an Asian country. You know, I mean, obviously the thing in wrestling was pretty much every Asian character was Japanese or whatever suited the, you know, the story. Yeah. Where, you know, that's sort of frowned upon these days, obviously. Although, you know, Kofi Kingston was from Jamaica for a while, and obviously, you know, they kind of eventually moved him to
That's a good example of one they've done recently that kind of backfired, because I think it backfires. People figure it out really quickly.
Yeah.
And they know that you're lying.
Yeah. Apparently, Yokozuna was billed from the Polynesian Islands.
There you go.
Although he was representative of Japan, so that was kind of how they explained it. I couldn't remember the exact terminology, but
so before the match starts, Mean Gene interviews Hogan.
Yeah,
and this, in some ways, is the hint that this match isn't just going to be Brett and Yoko. That there's something else going on. But God knows, you would never consider it during this interview. But he says something that tips you off a little bit. He says the WWE title is staying in the USA. Now, neither of the competitors in the main event are American. So that, like, you can take that as a hint, I think.
Very possible. I had not thought of that. Well, you know, there's obviously the the USA chant during the match, which he didn't even comment on. But I just figured that all of these fans know that Brett's mother is from, was born in New York. So
I don't think that's.
I'm making that up. that was a complete
leap.
Yes. No, no. Obviously, that's not true. I was that was an attempted humor.
Okay.
But that unfortunately did failed. But we'll move on. Let's move on.
Yeah. Now there's not actually too much to this match.
No,
in my opinion,
it's
one of the shortest
long,
WrestleMania main events, right?
I believe it is the shortest. Yeah, it's a little bit over 8 minutes. I don't have the exact time here, but it's a little bit.
You
over
want to
8 minutes.
Quickly kind of go over what the story they told in the ring was?
Sure. Although I do have to mention first before that, before we talk about the story in the ring, is the very swank dark pink tights with the white outline for Bret Hart. That's one of my favorite variations that he had on his outfit. And, you know, and he had many different, I mean, obviously he had the same basic, you know, tights and, you know, and top, but, you know, and pink and, you know, black and white, but it always, you know, he had a lot of different cool variations over the years that I always enjoyed. So
have you ever heard the color theory of Bret Hart?
As far as how he got the pink and black.
Not how, and this, he doesn't even mention this in his book, and I'm not even sure how many people are conscious of this, but the more of a good guy Bret is playing, the lighter his tights are, and the more of a bad guy he's playing, blacker his tights are. It's an old throwback to the good guy wears white, the bad guy wears black. It's an old cowboy thing, right?
Okay, I'd never heard that before, but that's interesting.
And this is Bret at his like most angelic baby face good guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is as white as his tights get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? You go watch some of his footage from 1997, and it's almost all black with just pink trim.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Good one. Also, he even though maybe you know, Bret wasn't exactly the raging success in his first reign, but the reaction he gets is pretty top level. You know, just
like Bret.
Yeah. So. I mean, basically, I would say the story of the match is, you know, Bret's aggressive at first, but kind of Yoko fends him off with the size and power. You know, Bret gets a go behind, but then Yoko sends him out. And then but Bret manages to use his cunning and wile to get Yoko tied up in the ropes. And then he kind of is able to pound down on him and get the advantage. And then we go back to Yoko. Using his strength and power to send Bret down on a big clothesline, and then kind of works him over for a while, hits the big leg drop, and then we get a lot of nerve holds for a while, which slows things down a little bit. Bret has a few quick comebacks that are felled, including one really, he takes a really nasty super kick, one of the better things I've ever seen from Yokozuna. And then we get Yoko missing a charge off an Irish whip, and then Bret kind of makes his comeback, you know, hits some of his usual offense, and eventually is able to he does the 10 punches in the corner thing, but then Yoko you know, pushes him off, and but Bret is holding on for dear life on the turnbuckle, and actually pulls the turnbuckle off, and then he's able to ram Yokozuna's head into the turnbuckle, and is able to lock the sharpshooter, kind of in a nifty little thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the end, we get Mr. Fuji tossing salt into the eyes. Very, very, very old school, Japanese heel stuff. And
right in front of the referee, too. Right, like, yeah. He wasn't even
– yeah.
Ref saw it.
Right. And the funny thing, Bret is like, his face is right there. Like, he should also kind of be noticing that, yeah, like, hey, Yokozuna or Mr. Fuji's putting the salt in his hands now. Maybe I should, duck or close my eyes or something. Yeah. That really does that whole finish really makes Bret and everyone kind of look pretty stupid. And the other thing that bothers me is that Yoko just instead of like hitting a move or something while Bret is prone, it's pretty much he just pins him. Yeah. So
it's like the only WrestleMania main event that ends with just like a pin. Like, there's no big move or anything.
Right.
Except that's not the end, is it?
Unfortunately not. No, that is in fact not the end. Would you like to do the honors or should we talk more just kind of about the story of the match before we get into the post-match shenanigans?
So it wasn't just that I was a 10-year-old boy and my hero had just been killed. It wasn't just that.
Mm-hmm.
It was that 10 seconds after my hero's been killed, the other guy, who's a lot of other kids' heroes, who I never really particularly cared for, comes in, consoles my hero, and is immediately challenged by Mr. Fuji and Yokozuna for a championship match, because I guess they're feeling cocky. I guess that's the motivation.
Yeah,
I guess they're like, well, we didn't sweat Bret Hart too much. Sure, we'll take Hulk Hogan on too. And the logic is never the logic is never academic in professional wrestling. There's a lot of holes to plots usually. But this one takes the cake as maybe the dumbest decision anyone's ever made ever is to go ahead and challenge a fresh Hulk Hogan after you've had a championship match. And then Hogan, in my mind, of course, as a 10-year-old who loves Bret Hart, shows his true colors. That instead of taking Bret to the back and helping his friend, he basically shoves Bret to the side and accepts the championship match. Bret is never seen again, right? They just pan away. They focus on Hogan and Yoko. They have a joke of a match, right?
Yeah.
They try to do the powder thing. Hogan outsmarts them, gets the big boot, gets the leg drop. In what, 60 seconds, 90 seconds?
Probably more like 30 seconds, honestly.
Okay. Pins for the 1, 2, 3. And you know what? Fine. The place goes crazy.
Yes, it did. Yeah.
But hotshot booking will make the place go crazy.
Yes.
Generally. Like when you throw curveballs into wrestling plots, people do generally react positively.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't, like... Did anyone want Hogan to be WWE champion again?
Besides Vince McMahon, I don't know.
I don't know. Please try to explain to me why this was a good decision.
Well, I can't explain to you why this was a good decision. I can come up with some slight adjustments, well, more than just slight adjustments to this, that would have made it work much better.
Okay, go ahead. Fantasy book WrestleMania 9.
Okay. Basically, it would have been better had, A, the match been a longer, more traditional WrestleMania match, mm-hmm. and a better one, which I think they were capable of pulling off. Actually, the WrestleMania 10 matches, you know, it's pretty good. And this one was fine. It was just sort of... it was an 8-minute match. There's not a whole lot you can do. And there was a... 2 minutes of nerve pinches in the midst of that.
Yeah, a little too much nerve pinch for me.
Yeah, agreed. So you have like a really hard-fought contest that Bret Hart comes short on through some nefariousness, but not nefariousness that makes him look incredibly stupid.
Bret Hart was guilty of one thing that a lot of people don't accuse him of, and that's in big match situations, he will often try to do matches that were done in the 70s. You know, like him and Backlund, him and Yoko, like these would be really like really old school style wrestling matches.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because Bret had a huge respect for those kinds of old school wrestling matches. Unfortunately, he was wrestling in 1994.
Yeah.
And that ended up making a lot of his sort of big matches seem dull.
Well,
like Bret could wrestle a fast paced, super modern style match. But I feel like when all the cameras were on Bret, he decided to really throw it back.
I will agree that in certain circumstances that's true. Although, again, what more are you going to do with Yokozuna? I mean, you know, there's limitations there. I mean, you know, he was athletic for his size, but he clearly mm-hmm. didn't have much endurance, and so. I can sort of see...
This is more athletic a contest than WrestleMania 3, anyway.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, there's limitations that you're working with when you're working with mm-hmm. Yokozuna. But even if it hadn't been significantly longer, just kind of the idea that Bret loses... You know, Bret gives, like, a really good struggle and works really hard and isn't just forgotten about, like, a second later. But...
Yeah.
So... Okay, then, you know, Hogan comes out to protest the injustice still. It works out basically the same scenario happens. Maybe, you know, it's a little bit of a longer thing, so it doesn't make Yokozuna look completely foolish.
Mm-hmm.
Then you build to what was the original plan. You build to the Bret Hart, Hulk Hogan match, you know, at SummerSlam. And then you have the whole, you know, you have Hogan, you know, Hogan the legend, you know, back as champion. You have, you know, Bret the Young Lion looking to, you know, bring it back. Maybe you even tease, like, you know, Brett kind of being mad about, you know, how it all went down. Maybe you even like sort of tease like, oh, you know, is he going to go heel? Is he not going to go heel? Kind of. Maybe you kind of, you know, bring the edginess out of Hogan a little bit, try to, you know, sort of like, you know, defending himself. Like, you know, you waved me on to take him out, you know, don't be mad about it, you know, and, you know, and focus on that for the summer. And, you know, I know that, you know, that really wasn't possible because, you know, obviously Hogan and Vince had a falling out or whatever. And, mm-hmm. you know, and Hogan left, but, you know, if it had played out like that, and if the, you know, and if kind of this all scenario had been, you know, hadn't kind of been treated like a joke, but just because of some of those little things, I think it could have played out better and in more interesting ways. And I think it could have benefited Brett, assuming that in the end, Brett had, you know, been able to beat Hogan and then they kind of did the passing the torch thing.
What did Brett end up doing at SummerSlam 93?
He and Lawler had actually really fantastic. Well, it was him and Doink. You know, they had the whole thing with Lawler
That's
coming
right.
in with the crutches and, you know, and pretending to do the accident and that whole bit, which was actually fantastic. But
but not Brett and Hogan.
Well, no. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Even if you've done Brett and Hogan at King of the Ring, of course, you know, you lose the three great Brett matches they did at King of the Ring, which, you know.
Yeah, it's true. It's hard to sort of erase any part of that history because, like, even if Brett wasn't in the main event, he was still putting on the best match of any show in 1993.
Yes.
With guys who you wouldn't necessarily think would be in the best match.
Right.
I just want to say one last thing about WrestleMania 9.
Sure.
It was a WCW show.
Okay.
And that's why I think it was so weird.
Okay.
WrestleMania 9, far more than WrestleMania 8 and WrestleMania 10, was a WCW show for a couple of reasons. Mm-hmm. One, almost every single match, I think save one, features at least one or two members of the NWO.
Okay.
Often winning.
Yeah.
Almost no good guys went on this show. This mm-hmm. is maybe the first WrestleMania in a long time where almost no good guys went. And I personally don't think the good guy wins at the end, but I guess most people chalk Hogan up as a good guy here still. It ends in a screw job where Hulk Hogan comes out on top, which is, you know, how most WCW pay-per-views ended. Mm-hmm. And then the final thing is the ropes are black and yellow.
Hmm.
Which is something that WWE almost never did. They almost never had black and yellow ropes. But WCW did at this point in time.
Hmm. That's interesting. I didn't realize. I didn't notice that.
Like, the first thing I noticed about WrestleMania 9 was that the ropes were different. Like, usually WrestleMania had red, white, and blue ropes.
Mm-hmm.
Every year before this one. And all of a sudden they're black and yellow. And I blame the entire show on the ropes.
Okay.
I know it's total superstition and voodoo there, but I think if they had red, white, and blue ropes, the whole thing would have worked out. It would have given the fans something to chant USA at anyway.
It's true. Well, Brett's mom, you know.
Brett's mom.
Yeah. Brett's mom. Come on.
Okay. I'll give you that. Yeah. They were chanting for Brett's mom.
Yes. Another thing, WCW, Jim Ross.
That was the other thing. Jim Ross commentated with Heenan.
Yeah.
Jim Ross just came from WCW. Heenan was about to leave to WCW, mm-hmm. as well as Savage.
Yeah.
Most of the roster of WrestleMania 9 would not be there in a year and a half.
Yeah, or, you know, significant portions. Really. I mean, this was, you know, kind of the end of, in a lot of ways, sort of the old, you know, WWE and, you know, and evolving into, you know, I mean, yeah, they're obviously, I mean, you kind of think of like that 92 to mm-hmm. 96 era as like kind of the big transition era before, you know, they get into the Attitude era stuff. So, and obviously with, you know, Shawn and Brett leading the way, Undertaker to a certain extent, you know, and Diesel and a couple other guys. So
it also involves a tag team match with the Steiner brothers.
It's true.
And the Steiner brothers, while, yes, they were in the WWE for a little while, they were never considered like a WWE tag team. They were a WCW tag team.
Yeah, they never seemed to really fit in WWE either. Actually, Scott Steiner in both times he was in, he just didn't seem to work for whatever reason. The second time is that he couldn't wrestle anymore. But the first time, you know, it was just sort of like, yeah, even though, you know, I mean, they were over enough. I mean, they were popular and, you know, they did have some good matches here or there. But, you know, yeah, it just didn't, for whatever reason, yeah, it just didn't seem right to have them in there just kind of, you know, for what they were doing.
Yeah, the only match that didn't have an NWO guy was Giant Gonzalez and The Undertaker. Yeah, every other match had NWO guys.
Yeah, that's pretty – it's weird how, like, things could be so bad in wrestling during this time, but, like, just a few years later with most of the same guys in the other company, like, it could be so, like, awesome, you know? Like, I mean, and obviously just – you know, just context is everything and storytelling is everything and timing is everything and all that. I mean, talent certainly matters, but I mean, you know, it was good talent in 93 that, you
sure.
know.
Oh, this wasn't a bad card.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it ended up being like not good matches mostly, yep. but the talent, you know, wasn't the issue. It was just, you know, the, you know,
sometimes a show just doesn't work out.
Yeah. There, I mean, sometimes you have bad luck. You know, the atmosphere just kind of being the outdoors in the Caesar's Palace was kind of weird.
Another thing that made it seem like a WCW show, because WWE almost never did outdoor shows in small places like this.
Right. Yeah. It feels like a Road Wild or something, you know?
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah. You know, without the biker rednecks, I guess. But
yeah,
you know,
I just want to say, although I'm still right about the NWO thing. The opening match with Shawn Michaels and Tatanka. Shawn Michaels was an NWO member in 2002,
WCW. So it's true. So it's true. And who knows? Tatanka might have been an NWO member at some point. You know, it's hard to, you know.
Yeah. I think that's all you can say about Bret Hart and Yoko.
Okay. Well,
they have a much better match the next year.
Yeah, that's a fun one. So yeah, I guess I don't have anything else either. Thanks for talking WrestleMania 9 with me and everyone. Thanks for listening and goodbye.